Welcome to the Dialogue by Wirepoints, connecting the dots between our economy, government, and people. And now your hosts, Ted Dabrowski and Mark Glennon.
Hello, this is Ted Dabrowski, and I'm with my partner, Mark Glennon, at Wirepoints. And this continues our discussion from last week, where we talked about what to look out for in 2022, the important issues. And last time we spoke mostly about the fiscal matters, the elections, what's on the ballot. This time around, we're going to talk about some broader issues that are certainly affecting Illinoisans. And heck, why don't we start with number one, Mark, COVID. It's not like 2021 ends and our COVID problems go away. As a matter of fact, they may get worse in 2022 because we got Omicron coming here, and we have to start thinking about how we deal with that. We've had 2 years almost under COVID. We think we know how to manage lots of it. Obviously, it's still very painful. People are still dying. We still got people who are sick, but we're a lot smarter about it than we used to be before. And hopefully we learn a lot of things about Omicron soon so that we can react. But that problem is not going away. What are your expectations for 2022 and what matters?
Hopefully the regime will broaden its focus a little bit to something beyond vaccines and masks. We're not anti-vaccine here, by the way. Vaccines work for people at risk by making their chances of getting hospitalized or dying far less. But as we speak, the new research is coming out on Omicron, which has now become the dominant variant, that says that vaccines are, their effectiveness against Omicron is reduced by 70% to 80% from the others. So we're not going to be able to rely only on vaccines. And hopefully, finally, we'll begin focusing on therapeutics, which are very effective. More new ones are coming out. The most effective has been the Regeneron and other antibody treatments. Initially, they do not work against Omicron. However, Regeneron says they can fix that rapidly, and they're working on doing so. But those and the other new drugs coming out show great promise for reducing the severe consequences of the crisis. And we need to start focusing on that. This is a topic we've complained about from the start, people weren't educated about this, and that hopefully that's going to change. I think the public needs to demand it, and hopefully our policymakers are going to wake up on it.
Yeah, you know, it still drives us crazy, and anybody who's listened to us over the last year, how much we've complained about the lack of data, the lack of information. I think the public, and we've seen it, the public is more and more sick, maybe less so in Illinois, maybe more so in the rest of the country, but the public is sick of all the controls, all the mandates. Recently, Lori Lightfoot is now mandating vaccines to go into restaurants and other type of places in Chicago. That's a big deal. And, you know, that's a big deal when you talk about the viability of Chicago. People are already concerned about going to a place like Chicago with the crime and, you know, corporations not working, you know, in the office and things like that. So, you know, these continuous controls from top down, when we've seen so much failure from top down on how to react to this pandemic and to this virus, you gotta wonder whether those are some of the triggers that spark change in Illinois finally, and certainly in Chicago, or will people just roll over, as many people have done in Illinois? Many haven't, and many have, and that's been the problem. So we have to see where that ends up, but certainly that could be a trigger of change. Certainly as it relates to schools, where that's where, you know, when we move to the next topic, I want to talk about mama bears. You're starting to see people react in ways that I've never seen in Illinois. People be really angry, but in a rational, but resolute way. I haven't seen that before, and I'm seeing it now.
No, we haven't. It's not just on COVID. It's on the political indoctrination in schools, critical race theory. And it cuts across party lines from what we can tell. A lot of people are coming to those school boards and speaking up. And this is significant because it really is true that suburban female voters are the swing voters in many of the key states, and particularly in Illinois. And if they turn because they're not happy with how their government is handling their schools, and they really become mama bears, and as you correctly described them, they are quite fierce about this. This is a major shift. They have every right to be angry. These are topics we've written about for a long time. And it's really heartwarming to see parents standing up for their kids this way and doing the right thing. I think they're going to stick with it. It's another cause for optimism.
Yeah, I think you're right. You know, I had a chance to be with a table full of, let's call them, parents who want to take back control of their schools kind of group. And, you know, I was so impressed. Some men, mostly mama bears, and, you know, their eloquence on the issue, their professionalism on the issue, because we're talking about, you know, there's a lot of serious moms out there who, you know, if I were Governor Pritzker, I'd be pretty worried, because these are formidable women with great careers. Many who've been working at home for a while, and now that's, again, what we're calling the mama bears. They're awake. And, you know, I think of one group, Awake Illinois, you know, they are ready to take on the system. So they want better schools, you know, and things have gotten so bad. Maybe it's not about better schools, but different schools, you know, school choice. And so watch out. That might be the swing we're talking about in Illinois. If it comes about, it's because that group of not just suburban moms, but moms throughout the state who finally stand up and say, enough is enough. We don't like your policies.
And suburbanites are increasingly seeing crime come into their neighborhoods too. It's spilling over from the city. Large gangs raiding malls in the suburbs and elsewhere. Ted, you've been following those numbers in particular. What are you seeing on the trend in crime? It's obviously ugly, but just how ugly is it?
You know, if you're not careful, you know, you're worried about Chicago. You don't like what you see. You're obviously, if you were scared by the riots, and now of course you're scared by the smash and grab that's going on. But you know, if you read the paper, they might say, well, it's happening in all big cities, and so you kind of dismiss it as maybe this is just a wave of what's happening. And clearly it is happening elsewhere. But I was shocked by the numbers that we ran in a recent piece we did, where if you look at Chicago and you compare it to LA and New York, our homicides per 100,000 are what was it, three times higher than LA's, and six times higher than those in New York. So yeah, places are bad, but we are, you know, bad, and that's what scares me. You've got these record number of homicides, record for the last however many, you know, couple decades it is. We used to be higher than this before. But, you know, a lot of it has come from these policies that have been way too lax on prosecution, way too lax. You know, they set the felony level for smash and grab at $1,000 and above. And so, you know, we've given a green light to young people to go in and just take something worth $400, $500, $600, no problem. It's getting so bad, though, that you start to see some impact of that. You know, Lightfoot says that she doesn't want electronic monitoring anymore for bad guys. Well, it's about time, right? But maybe too late.
This one I am kind of pessimistic about, because I just don't see any effort to fix it either. The state could be intervening in this and forcing solutions on Chicago. We hear nothing, however, from Pritzker, nothing from the state attorney general, nothing from the General Assembly, except perhaps from a minority that tries to pass laws toughening up on things. We did recently hear Lightfoot say that she'd like to crack down on the number of violent arrested felons who are turned back onto the streets. But it's not clear that that's going to materialize anything. We certainly haven't seen the machine establishment in Chicago demand the resignations of the people who are responsible, which are Kim Fox, the Cook County State's attorney, and the chief judge of the Cook County courts. You got to get rid of these people. And the machine is not intent on doing that. Those are their people. And so I unfortunately don't see much changing in the near term. Lightfoot's primary solution that she's emphasized again and again is to invest in the bad neighborhoods. She said, we're going to invest our way out of crime. Well, some of that may be entirely appropriate as a long-term solution, but the fire is burning now, and that requires firm, tough policing, enforcement, arrests, and imprisonment for violent offenders. And I don't see any progress on that front.
You know, Mark, we have a donor, and I happened to just look her up, a new donor. And I looked up something she had written in a newspaper. And one of the things she pointed out is Six Sigma. And I don't know much about Six Sigma. And but one of the things is step three, she points out, and there's, without me knowing what I'm talking about, there's eight steps. But anyway, step number three is stop the bleed. And you're absolutely right that there need to be long-term solutions to the crime problem in Chicago. And you got to get down to the root causes. There's no doubt. I mean, the way to fix it for the long term is you fix root causes. And you've talked a lot about that, Mark, and you've written some good stuff about that. But within that, the first thing you do is stop the bleed. And that means you've got to get tough. You got to stop the murders. Yeah, you can't stop them, but you got to dramatically bring them down. You got to get tough, and you got to do the right things. And nobody wants to do that right now. I think that the only thing that gives me a touch of optimism, Mark, is that they and their failed policies look, what's the right way to say this? They look dumber and dumber all the time. And it might just be out of sheer embarrassment that their failed policies continue to lead to lots of killing, senseless killing of young people, even kids, that eventually their failed policies just have to be revoked and rebuked because of the killing it's led to. So that's crime.
You have to wonder if that's part of the reason for this dramatic shift in the party identification of Hispanics too, that we've seen nationally. These are numbers are absolutely stunning, that Hispanics nationally now support Republicans more than Democrats. It's like a 40% shift over the last 2 years. Part of that probably is because they tend to live in urban areas where the crime is the worst. It's not in their neighborhoods, however. There's no doubt a lot of things going into that shift, but it's really dramatic, those national numbers. Ted, your mother was born in what, Costa Rica?
Ecuador.
And you're no stranger to this. You've worked extensively in Waukegan with their Hispanic community. Do you have any sense for whether those numbers would, that shift in party allegiance it applies in Illinois, in Chicago, or how will the Latino segment respond to this here in Illinois?
Yeah, and of course, I don't have any firm numbers, so anything is just my pure feel going off some of the polls that you're talking about nationally, but kind of extrapolating to Illinois. I think if you know something about the Latinos, they are, you know, conservative by nature, you know, more religious, very strong families, you know, multi-generation in the home. And so they're not going to like a lot of what they're seeing, and in particular around the crime. As you mentioned, I spent almost a year in Waukegan promoting school choice on the ground, knocking on doors. It was one of the best experiences of my life, and I'll remember it forever. But, you know, what struck me is how entrepreneurial they are. You know, they have their small businesses. They have their small, it's a restaurant or, you know, establishments. And they don't like the destruction of what they've seen of small businesses. They've spent a lot of time protecting those small businesses. So my guess, like you, and you know, they care a lot about education. That's another important point. A lot of them who come over from their respective countries, they don't have the same education level that we have here, but they know instinctively that they want their kids to get a better education, and they're not happy with a lot of the things that go on. So certainly CRT makes no sense to them. So I think that I predict, especially in Chicago, that the Latinos, and they haven't engaged themselves in the way they could. They haven't flexed their muscles, but I think they will. And I think that's going to be a huge game changer over the next decade. It has to be a huge game changer.
Well, and school choice, we should emphasize too, that potentially is a overwhelming issue. Again, those national polls show just dramatic majorities in favor of school choice crossing across party lines. The unions here, the public unions here in Illinois, of course, would never touch it, and therefore our General Assembly won't touch it. But people are going to start speaking up for this, especially Hispanics, I think. And it's driven by those numbers primarily, Ted, that you've been covering in detail. Our schools are just abject failures. These numbers on school underperformance, failure to train kids in the basic nuts and bolts of what you need to function in the job market are just staggering. And it's got to change. We think school choice is the answer. I sure hope that becomes a big issue in the coming year.
Yeah, and I think it should. It will. It's a question to what extent and whether the situation gets so bad with more closures, with more mandates. You and I are going to talk a lot about in the next few weeks about these mandates to vaccinate young kids. A lot of parents are going to oppose the hell out of that. So look for school choice to be a big thing. And also, I think the more they do on CRT, which we haven't really hit right now, but the more they do on this critical race theory, the more that they continue to invoke, the oppressed and the oppressors and systemic racism and white supremacy, I think the more that it's going to drive more and more. And as it spreads through the system, the more it's going to drive people out, which probably leads us into our next thing is, Mark, what's next for BLM, for wokeness? What's its future?
Even smarter Democratic strategists have started calling this out, that it's a big problem for Democrats. James Carville has said flat out the Democratic Party is too woke. It's turned off people. We saw the results in Virginia. It's true across the country. I think this is backfiring on them. America had this surge of concern for racial equity. God bless them, after George Floyd was shot, but it somehow evolved into this woke, politically correct, critical race theory stuff in the schools especially. And not too many people want to have anything to do with it. I think what's most interesting is what we've heard from our guests. Ted, we've had an activist from the South Side tell us that this is something that the white folks in the suburbs argue about. And there's a few activists, very loud, vocal activists that dominate the discussion from the far left again, with supported by those four horsemen of the apocalypse that I spoke about earlier. But the public is not behind this, and I think it's going to backfire on them.
Yeah, sorry, you were mentioning Devin Jones, who was on our podcast, when I think of one of our better podcasts. And then we also had Frank McCormick, who's a teacher at Waukegan, talk about CRT and its infiltration of the schools. So yeah, I think parents are awake to the wokeness. It's taken a long time. Many people still don't understand it. It's these are funny. CRT means nothing to people. Critical race theory sounds like this, I don't know what kind of term that is, but once you understand how it's being practiced in the classrooms, you start to say, hey, not for me, and certainly not for my kids. And those are the kind of things I want to talk to my kids about those tough cultural issues. And what I want the schools to do, back to your point, Mark, I want those schools to teach my kids to read, how to do math, how to critically think. And they're not doing that right now. The results, and we've talked a little bit about it in past podcasts, is these reading and math results are beyond pathetic. And if you go to the lower end schools, they're not learning. I'm being overly, it sounds like I'm being hyperbolic. They're not learning anything, but I think that's true. Of course, you always have the handful of kids that succeed, but the numbers are outrageous. And we have a big piece coming out in January on that. So be on the lookout for that. We're excited by the piece, not because of its results, because they're so bad, but the failure needs to be exposed, and there needs to be accountability called for from our Illinois government, ISB, and others.
And unhappy parents, like other unhappy people, vote with their feet. They, if you have good schools, people would be in Chicago. They wouldn't be leaving. It's an economic development plus if you have in migration. People are moving out of Illinois We just got some new staggering numbers, Ted, that you wrote about just recently. Tell us what they are.
Yeah, so the U.S. Census Bureau released a week ago numbers on the population losses for Illinois in 2021, and we are not surprising. We're the second worst in the country in percentage terms. We lost 114,000 people, almost 1% of our population, gone. And you know, we are the extreme outlier in the country. New York was the only other state to lose more on a percentage terms than we did. And we know the reasons. We've discussed them here. It's the high property taxes. Add the high crime this year. Add the COVID mandates. You know, add the falling home values relative to the rest of the country. We've got a lot of bad things going on. And you know, Mark and I do this work not because we're pessimistic for the long term on Illinois. We think that this place should be, can be, will be the great state that it is. But right now, it's got horrific management, horrific politics, horrific policies, and that's why we're spiraling down. But we hope that through the intervention of smart people, willing people, we'll turn this thing around. But right now, the people are fleeing.
And it wasn't because people dying from COVID, as I've heard a few suggest. The biggest component of that loss in population was the net out migration, correct me if I'm wrong, Ted, and that's where the real problem is. People are leaving. They're not coming here. They're not moving in either.
And it's important to point out that all of our neighbors grew. Just like over the last decade, we shrank, all of our neighbors grew their populations. This time around for the 2021 numbers, we shrank, all of our neighbors grew. So it's not a Midwest, Rust Belt, cold weather thing. It's an Illinois-specific problem.
Well, Ted, do you want to take a broad recap on the future of Chicago and the outlook for Illinois? I don't know if I'm concise enough to try to summarize it all. So I'm going to pass the buck to you on giving us an overview.
Well, you know, here's what I'd say. It's pretty hard to predict, right? Everything we're saying is really ugly. And, you know, if Mark, well, I don't know, I'll speak for myself. I wouldn't do what I do at Wirepoints and, you know, what I've done in the movement for the last, whatever it has been, 12 years or so. If I didn't think that this state had, in Chicago, you know, it's where I was born a long time ago. This is where my parents immigrated to. It's an amazing place with amazing roots, amazing history. And same thing for Illinois. The problem is that, you know, it's just like it's like an alcoholic, right? An alcoholic can't fix him or herself until he or she finally realizes that they're sick, that they've got a problem. And so we're at that stage of, you know, problem recognition. Sadly, you would think that the problem would be obvious and we could solve it tomorrow. But we're still trying to convince people that people are leaving. You know, the population numbers say it, but our politicians ignore it or they brush it off. So, we have to keep hammering, you know, this pension problem. We have to keep hammering at the collective bargaining laws. We have to keep hammering on the crime so that, like you said, Mark, people are held accountable because right now nobody's being held accountable. And, you know, I want to argue that we'll get there. Is it next year? I'm skeptical, right? But you never know how things turn. And you got to keep working hard, be optimistic. And things will turn at some point. But right now, the future for Chicago and Illinois doesn't look good.
You know, Ted, I think one of the things that gives us a different perspective is being older and knowing what Chicago was like in the past. Your parents, both immigrants, met here. My parents were not immigrants, but you know, my dad lost his dad at age 16. His mom disappeared. He ended up during the Depression in a boarding house in Pennsylvania along with his brother. Where did he come? Chicago, because that's where people came. They had huge amounts of opportunity, found his wife here, found a good job. And it was a beacon for those kinds of people. And the advantages that were here in Chicago are the same advantages we have now, but they've been undermined by our own government. Those things are fixable. It could be restored to what it was if we just get the government right, in my opinion.
Mark, there's a lady who's worked in the movement for quite a few years, and she finally got really just sick of what was going on here, and she decided to move. And you know, she's been in the house, if I have the story right, she's been in the house that her parents rebuilt after the fire, or not her parent, but her family had rebuilt after the fire. So she's had that house that long. And she said, finally, I'm out of here. Then she spent a moment and said, wait a minute, why am I letting them kick me out, force me out of my history, my family's history, my history here in Illinois, a place that I love, my land. And she said, no, forget it. I'm staying here to fight. And I love that. You know, not everybody can stay and not everybody should stay. If people want to find their opportunities, there's 49 other great states in this country. For those who want to stay, this is let's put it this way: it's an exciting year. It could be a pivotal year, 2022. You got an election. You've got pension amendments. You've got a lot of issues. You got COVID. You got the schools. It's going to be exciting, and we're looking forward to it at Wire Points. And we thank everybody who joins us and who follows us and who contributes to us and who comments with us and challenges us. All those things are fantastic.
It'll be a make or break year for Illinois and for the country.
So thank you all, and we look forward to talking to you guys in the year ahead.
Take care. Bye-bye.